Jay-Z, Beyonce, Mary J. Blige, Kevin Hart. They were all just chilling there. But I'm going to be touring with the biggest artists. I want to stand on the biggest stages. I want to travel the world. I want to live in the US.
Welcome to Dance Specific Talks. This podcast is made for us, the dancers. And our goal here is to inspire dancers from all over the world to become better, both on and off the dance floor. We want to provide you with a platform where we dancers can share and learn from each other. So let me introduce to you your host for this podcast, T-Sir. And remember, as always, by dancers, for dancers.
What's up, party people? And welcome back to another exciting episode of Dance Specific Talks. I am so happy that you are here again this week, as you are the guys that are making this possible. Now, today we are going all the way to LA, but we are going to interview a Dutch dance artist. He is representing Rotterdam and has an incredible dance journey. He has been doing gigs for some of the biggest artists like Rihanna, Nicki Minaj, Lady Gaga, and Cirque du Soleil. And we're going to talk with him about his commercial dance chapter, but also his background within the hip-hop and breaking scene. We are also going to touch up on his amazing transition into becoming a filmmaker and director. I can't wait to talk with this guy, and I know that we're going to learn a lot. So now, let's get it going. Welcome to this interview, Giannini!
Thank you. That was the DJ Khaled.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm too much of a dancehall dancer to not have those horns in the background.
I like it.
Man, how are you? Where are you located right now?
Man, I'm amazing. Thank you so much. I am in Los Angeles, California right now at the moment. I've been here living for
12 years.
12 years. Time flies. I've been here for 12 years. So that's where I'm at right now. Sun is shining. It's always usually 90% good weather here. So that's nice.
That's dope, man. I read that you moved when you were 21 years old, pursuing your dreams, but you are from the Netherlands, and I moved here 3 years ago, and it's always really nice for me to kind of discover the Dutch dance scene. And I just came across your page, man. You really a dope dancer that also is a filmmaker, and I want to get into that. But just to throw you into this interview, I want to ask you, what is one of the most courageous things you have done lately?
That's a good question. One of the most courageous things I've done lately. Let me see. You know what? I don't know. It could be anything. Could be anything. Doesn't have to be dance related, or is it also personal life? Like how
we go broad. We have the whole spectrum.
You know, I'm gonna tell myself probably one of the most courageous things I've done lately. Now, I've been here 12 years. You know, and this becomes a little personal, but I don't mind. You know, we're all people.
I love that. Go for it.
So, you know, in those 12 years, I've been dating. I've been dating and you know, trying to see what works for me. I was even married, got divorced. So I felt like, you know, right now I'm 33 years old. I felt like I lived three lifetimes already. You know, so I've gone through the motions, and in the 12 years, I've always told myself that it wouldn't work dating somebody from back home in the Netherlands until I met this person not too long ago. So I would say that one of the most courageous things I've done lately is saying yes to you know, the challenge, because it's not easy. Right now, I am in a long-term relationship. Hopefully one day she moves over to LA. But I was always, I would say, scared to try it, because I told myself, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. And I find myself right now, making it work. So I'm pretty proud of myself trying to do that. It is not easy. Probably that might, you know, especially dancers, we travel a lot, we move. So I'm not the only person obviously trying the long distance thing and for the time being. So I have a lot of respect for people that do it and succeed. It's not easy. And obviously I'm aiming to succeed as well. So it's something that I see as courageous on my end for trying to do that, because it's like I said, it's not easy. I think everybody says, yeah, it's easy, is lying. I don't think it's easy. So that would probably be the first thing I can think of on my end is trying that. Yeah, doing that.
Well, you know, I think that that's also says a lot about you as a person, you know, like when we meet obstacles, we can either choose to go for it, make it our best choice. And you obviously, after three lifetimes, have already conquered a lot of this shall not work. And as a European, even coming into the States is already, well, this is not really going to work. You know, for most of us, it doesn't work to come into the States working as a dancer, getting to So You Think You Can Dance top finalist is also, you know, so it kind of already says a lot about you. And when we talk about these three lifetimes, if we would chapter it, what would the title be of your chapters and how would you describe your journey coming to where you are today?
Wow. Beautiful question, by the way. That's awesome. You know what? I'm going to say the first chapter, I'm going to just call it upbringing, right? I've born and raised in Rotterdam, the Netherlands.
Represent.
It's my hometown. Exactly. It's my hometown. I'm very proud of it. Even the people here that didn't know about Rotterdam, they know now all around me. You know? So I represent my city where I'm from, the dance community there as well. You know, I started as a B-boy. So, you know, hip hop was my foundation even. And when I say hip hop, because hip hop, of course, evolves and changes. I'm talking about the OG old school hip hop, you know, as a B-boy, you know, the mentors around me, they were very adamant about learning the foundation and your roots, learning what is true hip hop, right? What are the elements of hip hop? What is hip hop really about? And, you know, the commercialized idea of hip hop, you know, nothing's wrong with it. But it's easy to forget sometimes, especially nowadays, what is the real roots of hip hop. So I'm very proud of that. I feel like my city gave that, my community gave that around me when I started. So that's chapter one, is my upbringing, my family. I come from a big family that was always musical. It was always supportive, luckily. You know, started b-boying when I was about 14, 15 years old as a teenager, and really immersed myself into the whole, I would say, underground scene, right? That's how I started. I didn't do choreography yet. I didn't know I could make money being a dancer. That was not the reason I started. I just fell in love with this art, you know, with this form of expression. So I would say chapter one is upbringing up until, let's say, I was 18, 19. That was chapter one. So I don't know if you want to move on to chapter
I
two.
Also, I also want to jump in on chapter one. Lloyd Marengo?
Yes, Lloyd.
All right, great. Yes. I got you. I interviewed him in one of the other interviews. He seems to be one of the OGs here. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lloyd is a mentor. We got Aruna. We got Benny. So it's you know, this thing in Rotterdam is called Hip Hop House.
Yeah.
You know, right now they got a new location. I think Aruna is still involved. But, you know, they switch owners and you know, organizational changes. But the first location was in Rotterdam at Cole Single. That's the place it was at, but that's where the OGs were. And, you know, way before I danced, they already were taking the torch from every generation. I feel like there's people taking the torch for the next generation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they were the people above me that I was a young kid and just, you know, even just the style, I felt like, you know, Amsterdam, I love Amsterdam as well. It's a whole different vibe to me. But Rotterdam felt always very gritty. Like even coming into Hip Hop House, I remember these walls with graffiti. They had DJ classes. Even like, you know, even the way they were dressed, I came into this whole world of like, wow, I feel home or something, right? Just the sneakers, the outfits, you know, the Pumas, like the Adidas, like it was such a vibe. And I was like, wow, I got thrown into this new world that I fell in love with. So, you know, props to my community and my city for that. But so that was chapter one, I would say. And, you know, on a more personal note, I've always known my father, but I was raised with my mother. So I felt like, you know, I had a stepfather, my mom, her thing didn't work out really well. So I felt like when I started dancing in those vulnerable years as a teenager, right? Because you can go different paths. We all go through life as a teenager. It's probably one of the hardest eras of a human life is the teenage years are so crucial, which direction you're going to go. And I felt like dance was the thing that kept me, I could just put everything in there, right? Mm-hmm. Any emotion, any energy that I had, especially as a young boy, you know, it's, you know, your surrounding, your environment, I think it's crucial to your, to moving into your 20s, what's going to happen from there. 100%. And I would say my environment in my city, all the dances there, it kept me focused. I found a passion. I was blessed to find a passion and shared it with others around me. And it kind of thrusted me into chapter two.
Yeah.
You know, I would say.
That's to jump in on that. I think it's so interesting. I never really thought about it until you said it now, but it's also, we come into hip hop for different reasons. And some people, it might be a missing father figure, and we find other father figures within the culture. It might be the sense of community, the sense of meaning, the sense of belonging to something or making something that feels real and expressing energy. Like, there's so many reasons that we come in. And I think hip hop culture has that beautiful thing of it facilitates all those needs. And absolutely. I definitely feel that even though I had a father in my life, I was missing other puzzle pieces that hip hop could give me. And so, yeah, thanks for sharing that, man. What would be the second chapter then?
Yeah. I'm going to call the chapter two, I'm going to call it Glitz and Glamour. I'm going to call it Glitz and Glamour because my life changed in a way that I, you know, I maybe dreamed of, I would say, but because I remember, I'm gonna start chapter two like this. I was 18 years old, or 17, 18. This new movie was in a movie theater. So, you know how you go to the movies and before the movie starts, you have this 15-minute window of trailers of the new movies that are coming out. So I saw this trailer for this movie called Step Up, right? Mm. So I'm already dancing 2-3 years and I'm seeing this trailer. I'm like, oh, wow. You know, I'm seeing dancers. I'm seeing B-boys. I'm like, what is this? So in the end of this trailer, it said something like, go to this website for a dance contest. So I remember that. So I go home, right? I look it up and this movie Step Up is coming to Amsterdam. It has a premiere. And for this special premiere, they are doing a dance contest for people. Now, if you win this contest, if you become to the final five or something, you get tickets to the movie for the premiere in Amsterdam. And after the premiere, after the movie, there's this dance battle. And there's some judges. And you can win. The prize was not really that interesting. It was, I think, a voucher for like a dance store or something. It was something small. So I was 17, probably 17, 18. I was like, so I signed up. I already did some filming and we'll get into that later. So I recorded my video. This was like pre-YouTube, pre-Facebook, pre-Instagram, right?
This was MySpace time.
that was that time. Yes, MySpace. And then for my Dutch people, we had something called Hives. It was before Facebook. It was like a social media platform, right? Mm. So I already did some as a dancer, especially as a B-boy, I recorded myself. And then I would try my windmills. I would try some head spins, some freezes. And I would watch myself back to see what I can improve about my style, right? So I was already doing some minor editing and filming just for that reason. So when this contest came, you had to upload a video. So I used a little bit of my basic editing skills, uploaded something. Long story short, got into the top five, got invited to the dance battle. I went to the premiere. Long story short, I won the dance battle, right? But one of the judges her name is Lucia Martas. She has a dance university, dance academy in Amsterdam, which, you know, musical theater people go there. Anybody that kind of wants to get, I guess, your degree in dance and maybe go from there. And I was studying like IT, like computer stuff. So I was just dancing for fun on the side. And I was like, whoa, you can go to school for dance? Like, I didn't know that because I was going to battles. I was, you know, I was training with my boys. I was like, so I won the competition. And this woman said, hey, I know you are supposed to win just a voucher, but I actually want to offer you a scholarship to my university. I think you have a lot of talent. Boom. And, you know, my mind just opened, you know, I talked to my mom, and my mom was like, you should take this opportunity. You like dancing. I had to switch school. So anyway, long story short, I had to audition. She told me, do you do ballet? I said, ballet? No, I mean, no, I'd only do hip hop. You know, at this point I started also doing more like freestyle hip hop, stand up freestyle hip hop, you know what I mean? So the new style hip hop. So I did not just b-boying at this point. I also started just freestyling, but I never did like any ballet, jazz, like those kind of styles. I didn't do that. She said, okay, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you free classes for 1 year. So I traveled 4 times per week from Rotterdam to Amsterdam after my school, because I was still studying IT. After my school, I would travel to Amsterdam, get this freaking ballet outfit and stand in this class full of girls, which I didn't mind at that time. You know, I was a young kid, like, whoa, what is this ballet? You know, whole new world opened up again. And at that time I was watching the American So You Think You Can Dance. And my mind shifted because, to be honest, a lot of people around me at that time were a little close-minded to certain styles. Like, you didn't see really b-boys saying, I'm going to do ballet. You know, that was not really, at that point, at least in my, you know, but I think So You Think You Can Dance changed the perception a little bit, because now what was happening, that were dope b-boys in the US having to do the Viennese waltz, having to do the rumba, having to do this contemporary piece for the show, and they killed it. I'm like looking at b-boys, the choreographers were using their skills as a b-boy and transforming it into this, you know, contemporary style piece. And it was art. Like, so my mind expanded. I was like, whoa, like, I actually want to learn how to be a dancer in the 360 full form. This is not just, you know, there's no reason we should have these different camps. Like, we're all one family in a way. Even if you're ballet, tap dancer, jazz, b-boy, it's all right. So my mind opened up. I said, you know what? Sorry to swear. I was like, you can bleep it out if you want, but I was like, fuck it. I'm going to stand in these tight ass leggings that I'm like feeling a little bit insecure about. But it went away because I was like, all right, it is the art form there, right? We b-boys dress with Pumas, Adidas, tracksuits. We do this and this. In ballet, you have a different culture, I would say. So my mind just started shifting. And I started opening up to being a student again, learn as much as I could. Forget what I know, teach me. And I started becoming better. And I had to do the audition after the 1 year to get into university. Mm-hmm. I got accepted. And then I was in school. I actually missed my city. I missed Rotterdam because I was in Amsterdam at this point. I liked Amsterdam, but I was like, man, I miss my city. And I actually want to focus on all my weakness as a dancer at that time, because I was very strong in my hip hop things and my urban stuff, but my technique, when people say technique, because hip hop has technique too, but when people in that industry say technique, they're speaking of ballet, jazz technique. That was my weak spot. And I told myself, I actually want to go, and I don't think they're going to accept me, but I'm going to try to do audition for the conversatory in Rotterdam, which is called Codarts, which is like high level, you know, people all over Europe and the world come there. They're trained in ballet. They trained in contemporary, like Italians, like all over the world, Canadians, people come there in my city. And I was like, I'm a hip hop guy. I can do a little bit ballet at this point, but I don't think they're going to. I did audition. Guess what? They said, you have talent. We want you. So I moved back to Rotterdam, still in school. Now I'm 19, 20 years old. And this is the beginning of chapter 2, right? Sorry for the long.
No worries.
Now something happened and what changed my life. Sorry, I got to add one more thing. I had on the dance university, we had different subjects. You had ballet, you had some hip hop, you had tap dance, you had all these different things. But we also had theory classes. We had dance history. You have anatomy to learn about the human body. But we also had psychology, which was very interesting to me in the first year. So the first exercise was, you know, write something on a piece of paper where you see yourself in 5 years. That was the first exercise. She said, you can dream as big as you want, but I am asking you one thing, just believe in what you write. And I was like, okay. So I started thinking, and I wrote something that day, and we're gonna touch upon it later. But everything I wrote came true completely. So it showed the power of dreaming and visioning, having a vision for your life, where you want, what you want to do, where you want to go, and envisioning that. That's powerful. So, anyways, I wrote down, I was 18, 19 years old. I was like, 5 years from now, I don't know how, but I'm going to be touring with the biggest artists. I want to stand on the biggest stages. I want to travel the world. I want to live in the US somewhere. I don't know. I felt already the Netherlands, as great as it is, for my ambitions, it's too small, this country. I need to move. And I knew that, and I just didn't know how. Flash forward, I'm 20 years old. I'm now in Code Arts in my city, Rotterdam. I'm in my second year, I believe. I still have to go 2-3 more years. This new show comes to the Netherlands. So You Think You Can Dance, the Netherlands, season one. And I already know the show because I was watching the American version. And I was like, let's go. Let's go. I wasn't sure. My cousin said, you should do audition. I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm good enough, because I was looking at the American level of the people there. And I'm like, man, they're killing it. So, they told me, what do you have to lose? Go do audition. I did audition, got into the show. My life changed in like 8 weeks because it was a live show every Friday night on TV, 8:30 p.m. prime time. There was no stream. There was no Netflix yet. There was no streaming services. I felt like the whole country at the time was watching television.
Yeah.
You know, if you missed something, too bad, you know? So everybody was watching their stuff on TV. And 8:30 Friday night on this channel, RTL4, that was like all families were watching the show. It was a new show, new talent show. And they only had singing shows mostly in the Netherlands at this point. It was the first big dance one, and everybody was watching. And within 8 weeks, because I was probably in the show for 8 weeks, I literally saw every week we had like one day off and we were staying in a house. I went back to my city, and slowly every week I was walking the streets and people started looking at me. People started recognizing me from TV, and my life changed. Like, and I was now 20 years old, known from the TV show. After the show, I made it to the third place of the guys, and it changed my life back home. But I was so young, and I was like, this is awesome. Everybody knows where I go. Everybody knows me. Every dancer knows me. Doesn't matter where I go in the country. People know me. It's crazy. But I was like, I feel like I'm only 20 years old, and I have so many more dreams. I can't stay here. Although it felt good, because my ego got stroked, because it feels good. Everybody's like, oh, you.
Yeah. You
know, I was making money because my mom became a manager, and I did these workshops, right? And I was capitalizing, banking on the shine I got during the time, right? Yeah. And I was 20 years old, my mom managing me. I was maybe some weekends making 2-3,000 euro, just like that. Boom.
No.
So I was like, it was very easy for me to stay there and be like, but I knew, no, money doesn't really, I want to go there. I have higher ambitions. So I started the process of my work visa for the United States, which is not an easy process. You know, it's also not cheap. It costs like, you know, just $6,000 just to apply and get the visa. And then you still have to get your plane ticket, you have your apartment, you have no job yet. So it was a whole undertaking. So long story short, I was 21, moved to LA. I got my work visa. I worked a year after the show at home. Saved all the money I could get, moved to LA. And I have to give props to this American dancer, choreographer / judge. His name is Dan Carity. Dan Carity. He is now in Holland, pretty well known. He does all the talent shows in the Netherlands. He told me, you're talented. What do you want? How can I help? After I got kicked out of the show, I was third place of the guys. He told me, you're amazing. What do you want? I said, look, I want to move to LA or New York. I didn't know yet, actually. But I can't stay here. I have big ambitions. I want to move. He said, I will help you. He introduced me to the agency. And that was a big crucial part to get the work visa. So anyway, I went to New York, checked it out, went to LA, checked it out. And I love both cities, to be honest, but it's like black and white. It's very different. But I knew at this point, I want to make money while dancing, right? I love the training. I love the art of it. But I said, I want to also make money with it. And I, from just meeting the dancers, most people said, look, if that's your goal, you should probably move to LA. Because most of the tours, most of the auditions of and the level are going to be held there. Mm-hmm. There's even New York dancers moving to LA because New York has some stuff going on, but not a lot, not as much as LA. Mm-hmm. LA is like the commercial industry.
Yeah.
So, and also like the palm trees and the weather, let's be real. Because Holland gets a little chilly and cold and rainy and gray. So I love the palm, you know, it was exotic. I loved it. So I moved to LA and that's why I call it glitz and glamour, because in my first year, I remember my first tour. The first artist that I booked was Rihanna, right? So I did this audition. They already had, I think, 6 dancers, 2 girls, 4 guys for her tour. But I think there was another artist and some dancers moved to another artist. So they needed literally 1 guy. So I did this audition, private audition, maybe 100 guys there. They needed 1 person. And I booked that shit and I'm very proud of it. Let me just say it. I'm very proud of it. And I felt like one thing that helped me in LA, in this commercial industry, was my background as a B-boy, as a freestyler. Because at this point I trained that I could do choreography. I could look clean. I could look sharp. I could pick up fast, but I could also switch and do freestyle and battle, right? So I wanted that. And it helped me during these auditions to stand out, I would say. Because I would go from clean choreography, then in the end, you usually have to do a freestyle. And I would just, you know, start doing freezes and doing things. And they were like, oh, shit, this guy can do both. You're hired, you know? It really helped me. So I booked Rihanna, and I remember Rihanna, it was around her birthday. So she had her birthday party. And she had this big-ass mansion in L.A. that she and we were invited. Okay, I didn't know what I was walking into, all right? So it was super, super secretive. I got to tell the story. We got an email where to meet. From there, we were dropped off with a van to another location. And then from that location that nobody knew about, dropped off to the mansion. It was super like high security, right? And I was like, what is this high security? I know it's Rihanna. She was already, it was that time of Rude Boy, you know? So she was already famous. She was already Rihanna. But I was like, what is this? I walk into this birthday party, right? And yes, it's like a movie, like mansion. I'm talking food everywhere, beautiful pool in the backdrop, fountains. I'm talking like legit, like, oh shit. And who is there? I'm going to give you a list of people that were there. And I'm 20, 21 now, 22. I'm 22. It's not even my first full year in LA, or maybe it was my first full year. Jay-Z, Beyonce, Mary J. Blige, Kevin Hart. I'm missing so many names. They were all just chilling there. And we 6 dancers were invited, and I'm walking there. This is 1 year of me moving to LA, and I had to pinch myself. I'm like, yo, these are people I grew up with watching. Like, and now I'm in the same room with them. Like, I was tripping, but I had to pretend it was normal, you know? But I'm like, yo, this is crazy. And, you know, because, you know, Rotterdam is a big city in the Netherlands, but it's not really big if you talk about these other cities. We come from a small country, small city, and I had this dream, and I'm here in the same room with Jay-Z, Beyonce, and it should not be like this. How is this possible, right? That's how it felt. And it showed me the power of believing, and then, of course, you have to get up and do the work, but it's possible.
Yeah.
So that was my first, you know, that's why I call it glitz and glamour, because I was thrown into a whole new world. Yeah. I'm talking tables of food and unlimited, you know, I mean, unlimited like luxury, right?
Yeah.
So when we went on tour, I went to Australia. I did the NBA All-Star Weekend. And I think Drake was there. I think Kanye, you know. So in a short amount of time, all these celebrities and these rappers and these, it was boom right in front of me.
Mm.
Even meeting Rihanna was a trip, you know what I mean? Like, shit, I'm here. So, After that, I booked a tour. Unfortunately, during the during MJ's lap, because you know MJ's number one for me. Let me just say that real quick. You see the hat? You see the hat? Come on now. So you know, but MJ just passed away after I moved. So unfortunately, I missed that. I couldn't do that. So the closest thing, which was great, was Cirque du Soleil teamed up with Michael Estate, with his mother, his brothers, his kids. Like they said, look, this is it. Unfortunately, never happened, but we do want to give the world something. And MJ, he was always a big fan of Cirque du Soleil. He loved it. You know, the whole magic wonder, you know, he made Neverland, you know, it's something that he loved really, that whole world. And he actually, there were talks, early talks of MJ doing something with Cirque. But because of the bullshit lawsuits, I'm going to call the bullshit lawsuits because I've that's my opinion, at least, of course. But it never came to fruition, right? He passed away and Cirque said, look, we're going to honor MJ and his wish. We're going to do something together. And they did this big audition. And I think about 6,000 dancers did auditions for this. I'm talking every dancer in New York, every dancer in LA, and everybody in between. So people flew to these two cities, and Paris were also auditions. And most dancers in Europe flew to Paris to do this audition. I think 6,000 dancers, they picked like 20 maybe. And, you know, with the grace of God, I'm not gonna get the credit to myself. I was one of the 20. So I booked Cirque du Soleil. This was a 3-year world tour all over the world. It was right after Rihanna. So now I'm on that. My, you know, saw the whole world, you know, lived in the best hotels and made good money with that. And think after, maybe a year after that, after I was done with that tour, then I went on tour with Lady Gaga for a year. So that's why chapter 2 is called Glitz and Glamour. I really got to taste how the life of a dancer, when you work at that level, how life is for you, right? It's the top 1% that gets to only, or whatever the percent, it's probably 1% of the dancers all over the world that get to experience that. Now, not every dancer is that want that or is their goal, but I wanted that. I knew very early on, that's what I want. There's no reason for me to have to struggle with money and dance on the side. I think I can do both, dance and make my money. And I don't want to hear nothing from nobody. I felt like if you want to only do your underground battles, and that's where it is, stay there. I respect it, but I felt I can do both. But it's not easy because you have to deal with some of the industry bullshit.
Yeah, because that was going to be my question. Like, in all of the glory and the surprises and the miracles that you have experienced in this chapter of your life, was there certain things that you before thought that you were attracted to that you during this journey realized, you know what, not my thing anymore, or it wasn't what I expected?
Absolutely. No, good question. I think, you know, obviously I got a glitz and glamour out of the way because there's definitely an opposite something to it. And I want to be real with that. As great as that is, there's also an opposite to that. There's a lot of political games, right? Which is in every, doesn't matter what job you take in life, you're always going to have the political game. You have people that maybe don't like you, you don't like. You have people that, you know, kind of kiss ass to get where they want to go. And I was never that person. I was like, look, I don't want to hang out with a choreographer just because they might can give me a job. If I don't like you, if I don't feel you, I'm not, you know, and I saw a lot of people that didn't care about that. They're like, look, I'm going to play this game. And if that means I have to be fake and have fake smiles, I'll do it. And that's something that I never liked doing. So I told myself, look, trust in your skills. You have the right look to do this. You have the right skills to do this. You were born for this. That's kind of where I found, like, so I want to be real, you know, and the right people are going to hire me. And I don't want to do the whole fake game, you know. So luckily for me, that worked. That worked that I felt like I stayed close to myself in that process. But also sometimes I didn't get jobs, maybe because the person next to me was being more, you know, kissing ass a little more, you know? And I was like, I don't want to really play that game. I'm here to show my skills. If you think I have the right skills, the right look, I'm the right guy, hire me. If not, then hire someone else. But, you know, so that's definitely part of the industry is the political
detaching thing. Also personally, like, I don't take this personally if I don't get a yes. I mean, if I get a no, like detachment from self-worth and
exactly, which is not easy. I'm not gonna say it's easy because once you know, for every big yes I got, I called some of these names. I got probably 10 to 20 no's, right? And it's hard. And when you live in a city like this and this becomes your life, and you go walk into an audition, there's 200 guys there, or you know, mixed dancers, men, women, they only need 10, right? Not everybody can book it. If you hit 10 no's in a row, 10 of these auditions in a span of a month, it knocks you down every time.
It touches
you. Know what I mean? You know, so how can you stay close to yourself, not lose yourself? How can you stay sane? How can you not become insecure? Because some people start to doubt themselves. Am I good enough? And I told myself always, as long as you give 100%, whatever is meant to be will be. That's my rule in life in general.
That's beautiful.
If I don't train, if I don't give my best effort, if my body doesn't look right, you know, if I start to look fat, those things all matter in especially the commercial world, right? You know, to give an example, if you're a working dancer in the level, if you made it to the last 20 guys, whatever, and they need to pick, they're going to be like, all right, guys, take your shirts off, right? Mm. It's another thing. Who's in shape here? How does your body look? Now, of course, most B-boys already in shape, you know, because we do something that's really athletic. But there are sometimes dancers that you know, don't keep maintenance of their body as great. And it can make you get cut for sure. Mm. And somebody that has some muscles, has looked good. Think about it. If Rihanna or Beyonce goes on tour with guys, they usually want to have guys that look like men, that look like have muscles. It's the whole society.
It's the industry,
right? You know, so those things, you know, so I knew if I train right, eat right, take care of myself, my look and my skills and train, whatever is meant for me, I'm going to book that. Everything that's I hear no means it was not for me. Mm. So that's kind of how I approach that life. But on top, with all the glitz and glamour, also something I got to touch on is also the personal life. I talked about relationships are not easy because you travel, you're long distance, maybe.
People don't know what you sacrifice in order to have that.
Exactly. And how about all the birthdays I miss for my family, right? Back home. All the, most time I try to go home for Christmas, but I've been on tours like Cirque where we're on the road and they pay you good money too. So it's a choice you make, right? Some people don't want to. I understand. I've always felt like, look, it's very short years as a dancer on that level. I'm going to squeeze everything I can. Mm. But it's a conscious sacrifice you're making.
Yeah.
And some people can make that choice, which I respect. And other people will have to. But it's never easy, you know, to see the WhatsApp videos of my families together on a birthday party. And I'm here on the other side of the world alone. You know, but then I have to tell myself, but you chose this lifestyle. You chose this. I felt I had to chase my dream, spread my wings. And I think that journey looks different for everyone, right? And that's a personal choice you have to respect, left or right. So, 100%. But that's definitely opposite in an, you know, injuries, right? Because one day you're on top of the food chain. You're touring with all these big artists and everybody wants to be your friend. And the other day, you're injured and you don't book jobs, right? Or for example, then everybody's too busy now. So there is definitely flip sides to everything in the whole industry. And, you know, I've been here 12 years, so I can definitely, and I've reached that top level. So I feel like, you know, I have a perspective about, you know, those different situations that you can find yourself in and how to deal with it and, you know, the challenges that come with the glitz and glamour. There's, like I said, there's an opposite thing to that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I interviewed dancers, especially from your commercial scene, it sounds to me that at some point you reach a turning point of I'm going to either, you know, as you say, like stop booking gigs and like disappear into that feeling of I had the fame and I'm where am I going now? Or are you going to turn the point of elevation? What was your turning point into your third chapter?
Yes, no, sure. Third chapter, which is I guess the current chapter, but I felt like I was getting to a point where you know, after I did Rihanna, as far as in touring, I did Rihanna, I did Cirque, I did Gaga, I did old school Paula Abdul, which is super dope from the 80s, 90s, right? I did her. And then in between, I did Nicki Minaj, and I did these different artists in between as well, like short projects. And I got to a point where I kind of had to stop and say, hey, that's crazy. Everything I dreamed of, I've achieved, right? But I also started looking around, and I was on these tours, and I saw dancers around me that were, I'm not saying old, but they were, I was, let's say, mid-20s. They were 36. And I would see them at auditions, right? And I would see them getting no's, getting disappointments again, sometimes booking a tour. And I told myself, where do I want to be when I'm 36, 35, mm-hmm. right? Something that most dancers don't think of because you're so in the moment, you're loving your thing, right? But I felt like now is the time to think about this because, like I said, the years are short as on that level. So, and I a few years before that, I was already getting more and more into film. And I knew, I made this short film. I used mostly dancers as actors in my films because they were around me. But I was getting good feedback on my work. And I knew right then and there that I found something similar when I started dancing, that same passion I felt for film. And I knew I want to make Hollywood movies. I am in the city. I got completely immersed in that world as well. After my dance career, I want to be the Black Steven Spielberg. You know what I mean? I want to make that. And not, you know, people in the beginning thought, oh, you want to make dance movies. I'm like, no. I want to make movies. So like, I'm talking further than just dance, because that's of course a great art form, but I'm talking about human stories. I'm talking about the emotional sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because what I started noticing is, as great as this glitz and glamour phase feels, you're also expendable. You're also a number in this industry, meaning if you get injured or you can't dance anymore, you're being replaced by probably 30 other people waiting to get in line. So I told myself, what stamp do I want to leave behind in life in general, right? We don't know when we're going to go anyways. And this dance stuff feels great, but I started to feel it's all about ego or something. That's kind of how I started feeling. Like, why am I doing this? Because yes, I want to make money with what I love doing. You know, that was 1 + 1 for me, you know? So I want to make money what I love doing. I want to be able to pay my bills, take care of myself, and hopefully a family with what I love doing. But also, I want to do something that is not about me, right? Because let's be real, us dancers, as much as we do it for the love as well and the art of it, it is very much, especially in this new era of social media, look at me, look at me, look at me. And I felt like I was craving something that was not about look at me. And film gave me that. I was like, whoa, I'm able to touch people. I'm behind the camera. It's not about me. I'm not in front. I'm using actors. I'm writing scripts. I'm putting my own emotions into it, my perspective, and I can touch people in a different way, right? Because we dancers definitely also touch people, right? When we're on tour and you see these thousands of people enjoying the show, some of these people go through divorces. Some of these people lost a loved one, like death or grieving. So that moment there of entertainment is sometimes healing for people, right? And sometimes we forget that even on the in the commercial side, it is something to be proud of that we do yeah. as dancers. But also, like I said, it felt very much like your self-worth in that. That's very dangerous. So, you know, some people are like, the moment you don't book those big artists anymore, the moment you don't have those likes or views on your Instagram, how do you feel about yourself? Mm. So I started learning I need to detach myself from this thing that I created. My self-worth is not in that, in as a human.
Yeah.
And as dancers, it's a very difficult thing to do, because once you start winning battles, you get attention, you get fame, you feel like, oh shit. But if we would strip all that away, how would you feel about yourself as a dancer and as a person?
Yeah.
You know, and I noticed that that's the danger of living that lifestyle, is your self-worth becomes in that. And I said, I don't want that. So early on, I started I still started dancing, but I really felt great to make something that was not about that. It was showcasing another piece of art through other people told, right? So I started doing that, and it felt so good, to be honest. And yeah. The dancing felt more and more. I started feeling, and maybe I was growing up as a man as well. I started feeling more like it's a lot of ego in there, to be honest. Mm. I want to detach myself from, and I can't judge other people. I want to keep it to myself. But I did notice around me that it was a lot of ego energy around, and I was like, I want to do something that's truly collaborative. And that's what I love about film. You have, I mean, look at the end credits of a film. You see the hundreds of people coming together to make one film. And sure, we as dancers come together to create something, but I felt that the film gave me a whole different feeling of collaborative energy.
Yeah.
Feeling of we're telling a story. The costume department, the actors, the director, you know, the lighting, everybody comes to tell the one powerful story. And I really love that. So I started shifting early on. And I got blessed because I started making money in film, doing, you know, directing music videos, which is of course easy for me. Working in corporate dance was easy for me because of my background, doing commercials, doing short documentaries, love that as well. And more I started making money with that. And it did one thing for me, that because LA is expensive, and the pressure to perform and to make money and to go on tour is high, right? And sometimes as a dancer, you end up taking jobs you don't really like because you got to pay the bills, right? This dance job is like, I don't like this choreography. I don't like this whole thing, but I got to pay my bills, right? So you do it. But now I became into a position where I was making money with film. So now I could be more picky with my dance, which is great. So I could say, I don't want to go to this audition. I don't need the money necessarily. So, which was amazing because now I could go back to the basics of dance.
Mm.
Just the pure the love for it, right? So if that was a big artist that I'm like, yeah, I want to, you know, that was a Kanye West audition. I was working for Warner Media. I got the call. It was a very last minute audition. I'm like, oh, I want to do Kanye for sure. I booked a job, which was maybe right before the pandemic. So it gave me more freedom as a dancer, as a commercial dancer on that level. It gave me more freedom to see where I want to go because I'm also having a second job or industry, which is film. So that's a little bit the three chapters right now.
Yeah.
So I'm like right now tiptoeing between the two, but mentally I must say my mind is on making films because I've achieved all my dreams as a dancer.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how kind of dancing saved you in the film in form of like easy access or easy bridging the gap because you already have the eye of the aesthetics, and how also film has saved your dance.
Absolutely.
In the way of now you can choose and now you can do it from the heart. Beautiful.
Yes.
Duality there. And I can't wait to see more of you and more of your work. Basically, I know you are doing a lot of films now, and I also know you won some awards, and that, you know, you're stepping in.
I'm proud. Let me show the awards real quick. I'm proud of them. We got the jury prize winner.
Yeah.
And then we got, another one is an award deal, is a development deal that I got.
Let them just stay there until you get the Grammys of film.
No, the Oscar.
The Oscar. That's Oscars. What it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, but just quickly, what is what do you feel excited about in the upcoming period right now?
I feel like a new chapter is opening in my life where, last year, one of my short films won some awards, and it kind of pushed me into this new level in my filmmaking career. Right now I won two development deals, meaning, there's all these production companies in Hollywood. You know, the biggest ones are like Paramount, Universal, you know those. But there's also tons of smaller ones that make films that you probably know as well. So I want two development deals with two different companies. So what they are now doing with me is they give me a little bit of money to start the development for a project that I want to make. So, which is great because, you go through these different stages. The film industry is definitely a marathon, not a sprint. It's something that takes time, right? So right now I'm in the early stages with one of the companies, and it's really opening up the door for me to hopefully, if God willing, if everything goes right, later this year or next year, to write and direct my first film, up until $4 million budget for the film that the company is looking to put into the project. Because that's what I want to do. I have always had big ambitions. So when I say Black Steven Spielberg, I am pretty serious. I'm not just joking. Because I am in a city where I notice if you dream big, you work hard, you have talent, you are serious about it, and you get to know the right people, a little bit of luck, it can happen for you. Step number one is having the vision and believing in it. So right now I'm on that path in the journey, and I'm very excited about it because I'm also looking forward to the day I can put all dance in my projects. Because, you know, sure, maybe one day I do a dance film, but that's, I feel like there's so many ways I can incorporate my background and dancers, the new generation. There's so many creative ways to use dance in film. And, you know, I'm more into the sci-fi thriller space. So I'm in more of the Inception and those kind of films that I like to make. But, you know, sometimes film have a club scene where you see people dancing. So I feel like I'm very excited about that as well in the future, to always keep my root with me somehow, some way, somehow, and give back to the dance community in my way, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just knowing that there's actors out there earning this and that much, and what difference that could make for dancers, and also how much you can expand the dancers' perspective of how much they can do and whatever ways they can express, not only on the stage or in a battle, but also on screen. So that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And, you know, I'm already booking in my next interview with you. I want to keep on following your journey, because this is super interesting. And I have, you know, of course, a million more questions. But for now, I do always end up with fill in the gaps. I'm going to ask you a few questions, and you can only answer with one word or an end of a sentence. Okay. Yeah?
All right. I like it.
So the best advice I ever got was?
It's so difficult because there's so many great advice I got, but I would say, the best advice to believe that you are worth it in a way that and I want to expand on that a little bit, but that's to believe, right? That's kind of the faith in yourself and the belief. But with that, I want to say that a lot of people insecure and doubt as part of you being human, but a lot of people think they don't deserve something. Who am I to think, why me, right? So I believe that's probably a big one for me is believing yourself, and also believing you are worth it, to all the success that you want to have, that you deserve it in a way if you're willing to work hard. So it's probably one of the best advices that I got. Because even with all the success, sometimes I'm like, am I a fraud? Why do I deserve all this, right? So I would say that's the number one.
Believe it's a lifelong journey. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. One word.
Okay.
My toughest decisions involve?
I would say relationships. Mm-hmm. And in that's in the broad word. That's family, that's friends, that's work, coworkers, that's love. I think navigating that, it's tough sometimes, I would say. That's probably the toughest decisions. Yeah. Letting friends go, making new friends, you know, following your instincts. I think around relationships, it's tough. Yeah.
Mm. That's a good one. It's for the next one. We're gonna elaborate on that on the next one. Okay. All right. And I'm gonna end up with freedom for me is.
Creating.
Boom. Thank you so much. If you want more good questions, like, I'm your girl. So just reach out. If you need an inspiration for your filmmaking,
I
got a lot of questions. All right.
I love
it. So thank you so much for your time. I can't wait to follow your journey. And I wish you all the best until the next time we talk.
Thank you so much. I love it. I got to say props to you. You are a great interviewer. I think this is the word. Great questions, great insight. I cannot wait for our part two.
Yeah, thank you, man. As a battle host, you know, I got to elevate too. So
Let's go. Exactly. All right. Thank you.
Don't forget to click subscribe, comment below, and give us a rating or review. We have a Facebook page, YouTube page, and we are on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and all the other podcast platforms. We also have an Instagram, so don't forget to tag us in your favorite episode and share it with the world, because we read all of it.